Chapter 29. Through the great arched window of the hall I saw the hotel brougham waiting at the door. On passing the door of the front room, it was originally meant for a drawing room, but a bed for Blunt was put in there. I banged with my fist on the panel and shouted, "I'm obliged to go out. Your mother's carriage is at the door." I didn't think he was asleep. My view now was that he was aware beforehand of the subject of the conversation, and if so, I did not wish to appear as if I had slunk away from him after the interview. But I didn't stop, I didn't want to see him, and before he could answer I was already halfway up the stairs running noiselessly up the thick carpet which also covered the floor of the landing. Therefore, opening the door of my sitting room quickly, I caught by surprise the person who was in there watching the street half concealed by the window curtain. It was a woman. A totally unexpected woman. A perfect stranger. She came away quickly to meet me. Her face was veiled, and she was dressed in a dark walking costume, and a very simple form of hat. She murmured, had an idea that Monsieur was in the house, raising a gloved hand to lift her veil. It was Rose, and she gave me a shock. I had never seen her before, but with her little black silk apron, and a white cap with ribbons on her head. This outdoor dress was like a disguise. I asked anxiously, "What has happened to Madame?" "Nothing. I have a letter," she murmured, and I saw it appear between the fingers of her extended hand, in a very white envelope which I tore open impatiently. It consisted of a few lines only. It began abruptly, "If you are gone to sea, then I can't forgive you for not sending the usual word at the last moment. If you are not gone, why don't you come? Why did you leave me yesterday? You leave me crying, I who haven't cried for years and years, and you haven't the sense to come back within the hour, within 20 hours. This conduct is idiotic," and a sprawling signature of the four magic letters at the bottom. While I was putting the letter in my pocket, the girl said in an earnest undertone, "Don't like to leave Madame by herself for any length of time." "How long have you been in my room?" I asked. The time seemed long. "I hope Monsieur won't mind the liberty. I sat for a little in the hall, but then it struck me, I might be seen. In fact, Madame told me not to be seen, if I could help it."
"Why did she tell you that?"
I permitted myself to suggest that to Madame. It might have given a false impression. Madame is frank and open like the day, but it won't do with everybody. There are people who would put a wrong construction on anything. Madame's sister told me Monsieur was out.
And you didn't believe her?
None, Monsieur. I have lived with Madame's sister for nearly a week when she first came into this house. She wanted me to leave the message, but I said I would wait a little. Then I sat down in the big porter's chair in the hall, and after a while, everything being very quiet, I stole up here. I know the disposition of the apartments. I reckoned Madame's sister would think that I got tired of waiting and let myself out.
And you have been amusing yourself watching the street ever since?
The time seemed long, she answered evasively. An empty coupe came to the door about an hour ago, and it's still waiting, she added, looking at me inquisitively. It seems strange. There are some dancing girls staying in the house, I said negligently.
Did you leave Madame alone?
There's the gardener and his wife in the house. Those people keep at the back.
Is Madame alone?
That's what I want to know. Monsieur forgets that I have been 3 hours away, but I assure Monsieur that here in this town it's perfectly safe for Madame to be alone.
And wouldn't it be anywhere else?
It's the first I hear of it. In Paris, in our apartments in the hotel, it's all right too, but in the pavilion, for instance, I wouldn't leave Madame by herself, not for half an hour.
What is there in the pavilion?
I asked. It's a sort of feeling I have, she murmured reluctantly.
Oh,
there's that coupe going away. She made a movement towards the window but checked herself.
I hadn't moved.
The rattle of wheels on the cobblestones died out almost at once.
Will Monsieur write an answer?
Rose suggested after a short silence.
hardly worthwhile, I said. We'll be there very soon after you. Meantime, please tell Madame from me that I am not anxious to see any more tears. Tell her this just like that, you understand? I will take the risk of not being received. She dropped her eyes, said, "Ooh, monsieur," and at my suggestion waited, holding the door of the room half open, till I went downstairs to see the road clear. It was a kind of deaf and dumb house. The black and white hall was empty, and everything was perfectly still. Blunt himself had no doubt gone away with his mother in the brougham, but as to the others, the dancing girls, Therese, or anybody else that its walls may have contained, they might have been all murdering each other in perfect assurance that the house would not betray them by indulging in any unseemly murmurs. I emitted a low whistle which didn't seem to travel in that peculiar atmosphere more than 2 feet away from my lips, but all the same Rose came tripping down the stairs at once. With just a nod to my whisper, "Akafiaser," she glided out, and I shut the door noiselessly behind her. The next time I saw her, she was opening the door of the house on the Prado to me, with her cap and the little black silk apron on, and with that marked personality of her own, which had been concealed so perfectly in the dowdy walking dress, very much to the fore. "I have given Madame the message," she said in her contained voice, swinging the door wide open. Then after relieving me of my hat and coat she announced me with the simple words, "Au revoir, monsieur," and hurried away. Directly I appeared, Dona Rita, away there on the couch, passed the tips of her fingers over her eyes, and holding her hands up palms outwards on each side of her head, shouted to me down the whole length of the room, "The dry season has set in." I glanced at the pink tips of her fingers perfunctorily, and then drew back. She let her hands fall negligently, as if she had no use for them anymore, and put on a serious expression. "So it seems," I said, sitting down opposite her. "Or how long, I wonder?" "For years and years. One gets so little encouragement. First you bolt away from my tears, then you send an impertinent message, and then when you come at last you pretend to behave respectfully, though you don't know how to do it. You should sit much nearer the edge of the chair, and hold yourself very stiff, and make it quite clear that you don't know what to do with your hands." All this in a fascinating voice with a ripple of badinage that seemed to play upon the sober surface of her thoughts. Then seeing that I did not answer she altered the note a bit. "Amigo George," she said, "I take the trouble to send for you and here I am before you, talking to you, and you say nothing. What am I to say? How can I tell? You might say a thousand things. You might, for instance, tell me that you were sorry for my tears. I might also tell you a thousand lies. What do I know about your tears? I am not a susceptible idiot. It all depends upon the cause. There are tears of quiet happiness. Peeling onions also will bring tears." "Oh, you are not susceptible," she flew out at me. "But you are an idiot all the same. Is it to tell me this, that you have written to me to come?" I asked with a certain animation. "Yes. And if you had as much sense as the talking parrot I owned once you would have read between the lines that all I wanted you here for was to tell you what I think of you." "Well, tell me what you think of me." "I would in a moment, if I could be half as impertinent as you are." "What unexpected modesty," I said. "These, I suppose, are your sea manners. I wouldn't put up with half that nonsense from anybody at sea. Don't you remember you told me yourself to go away? What was I to do?" "How stupid you are. I don't mean that you pretend. You really are. Do you understand what I say? I will spell it for you. S-T-U-P-I-D-A, now I feel better. Oh, amigo George, my dear fellow conspirator for the king, such a king. Vive Leroy. Come, why don't you shout Vive Leroy too?" "I am not your parrot," I said. "No, he never sulked. He was a charming, good-mannered bird, accustomed to the best society, whereas you, I suppose, are nothing but a heartless vagabond like myself." I dare say you are, but I suppose nobody had the insolence to tell you that to your face. Well, very nearly. It was what it amounted to. I am not stupid. There is no need to spell out simple words for me. It just came out. Don Juan struggled desperately to keep the truth in. It was most pathetic. And yet he couldn't help himself. He talked very much like a parrot. Of the best society, I suggested. Yes, the most honorable of parrots. I don't like parrot talk. It sounds so uncanny. Had I lived in the Middle Ages, I am certain I would have believed that a talking bird must be possessed by the devil. I am sure Therese would believe that now. My own sister. She would cross herself many times and simply quake with terror. But you were not terrified, I said. I asked when that interesting communication took place? Yesterday, just before you blundered in here of all days in the year. I was sorry for him. Why tell me this? I couldn't help noticing it. I regretted I hadn't my umbrella with me. Those unforgiven tears. Oh, you simple soul. Don't you know that people never cry for anybody but themselves? Amigo George, tell me, what are we doing in this world? Do you mean all the people, everybody? No, only people like you and me. Simple people, in this world which is eaten up with charlatanism of all sorts, so that even we, the simple, don't know any longer how to trust each other. Don't we? Then why don't you trust him? You are dying to do so, don't you know? She dropped her chin on her breast, and from under her straight eyebrows the deep blue eyes remained fixed on me, impersonally, as if without thought. What have you been doing since you left me yesterday? She asked. The first thing I remember, I abused your sister horribly this morning. And how did she take it? Like a warm shower in spring. She drank it all in, and unfolded her petals. What poetical expressions he uses. That girl is more perverted than one would think possible, considering what she is, and whence she came. It's true that I too, come from the same spot. She is slightly crazy. I am a great favorite with her. I don't say this to boast. It must be very comforting. Yes, it has cheered me immensely. Then after a morning of delightful musings on one thing and another, I went to lunch with a charming lady and spent most of the afternoon talking with her. Dona Rita raised her head. A lady. Women seem such mysterious creatures to me. I don't know them. Did you abuse her? Did she, how did you say that? Unfold her petals too? Was she really and truly? She is simply perfection in her way, and the conversation was by no means banal. I fancy that, if your late parrot had heard it, he would have fallen off his perch. For after all, in that Alger pavilion, my dear Rita, you were but a crowd of glorified bourgeois. She was beautifully animated now. In her motionless blue eyes like melted sapphires, around those red lips, that almost without moving, could breathe enchanting sounds into the world, there was a play of light, that mysterious ripple of gaiety, that seemed always to run, and faintly quiver under her skin even in her gravest moods. Just as in her rare moments of gaiety its warmth and radiance seemed to come to one through infinite sadness, like the sunlight of our life hiding the invincible darkness in which the universe must work out its impenetrable destiny. Now I think of it. Perhaps that's the reason I never could feel perfectly serious while they were demolishing the world about my ears. I fancy now that I could tell beforehand what each of them was going to say. They were repeating the same words over and over again, those great clever men, very much like parrots who also seem to know what they say. That doesn't apply to the master of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.